talking to George Filer, Frank Chili, and the remarkable... Well, I don't know what word... How would you describe this gentleman, Frank? This is the only human being alive who remembers anything about Operation High Jump and what he knows about Operation High Jump. Bill Tompkins is...
And what he's not saying, extraordinary.
Oh, I hear that loud and clear. But Bill Tompkins knew, obviously, from his position in the Navy, what happened down there. Really amazing. Any comment, Frank?
It's just we're getting an in-depth history lesson here of things we never even knew that transpired. And yet so necessary, and he said he's so pleased to be part of disclosure to get this information out to the public. And if I could make a suggestion, Jeff, we had a nice discussion this week about the Nordic Navy, the good guys that are working with our Navy, and he's got some extraordinary things to share about the Nordic Navy if you would like to hear about it.
Yeah, I would. I'd like to see... George, you have a comment about any of this?
Well, I happen to have some friends that were in the Navy, and they had told me some things about this, and it is available that Admiral Byrd made some comments after the battle, so to speak, and which was printed in Chilean newspapers. In other words, they landed in Chile after the war, and Byrd said that the most important result of his observations and discoveries is the potential effect that they have in relation to the security of the United States. The fantastic speed with which the world is shrinking, recalled the Admiral, as one of the most important lessons learned during his recent Antarctic exploration. And he discussed the fact that there were, advanced type craft that they had seen at that time. The Navy did not really admit much in losses, and all that was going on, although you can see on the Internet a few places where aircraft were actually down, and they showed you the crash aircraft.
Now, I saw some footage, allegedly, of this task force under attack. Black and white footage, not much, maybe a minute or two, from a Russian documentary.
Yes, I saw that as well.
Was your take on that it was legitimate footage?
Well, I don't know, but it seemed to be, let's put it that way.
It certainly did to me, too. Yeah, yeah.
Or else it was a good...
I don't think that they had technology.
In other words, they spent a lot of money doing it if it wasn't real.
Now, it is said that this, High Jump was 1947. We don't know. Admiral Byrd led about 4,000 military in total down there in an invasion of Antarctica. There is a lot of misinformation. We don't know what's correct and what isn't. But it is quite possible that fleet was allowed to escape, beaten and battered, as a lesson, as I suggested, and Bill concurs, that they would never go back and bother them again. Otherwise, they would all be destroyed, period. Go ahead.
Only a little was brought out, in the International News Service, but Byrd was talking about one going down there and dropping atomic bombs on them. And another thing, he said that he's not trying to scare anyone, but the cruel reality is that in the case of a new war, the United States could be attacked by planes flying over one or both poles. In other words, he was trying to warn the public, but not
tell them
exactly what was going on.
Right.
And...
Remember,
apparently, was a severe defeat for us.
Right. Now, who defeated us, folks? You have to ask yourself that. Who defeated a fleet, a huge state-of-the-art fleet sent down there by Secretary of the Navy and then Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, with Admiral Nimitz and Admiral Byrd and Admiral Cruzan? This was Operation High Jump. Do some research, but keep in mind there's a lot of misinformation. But it was real. There were enormous losses, and we never went back. Although some people claim there were smaller expeditions, I don't buy that. No reason to go down there and get killed any more than we lost. We may have lost 1,000 men. We don't know. That's classified to this day. Bill, anything you want to add to that you can add about Operation High Jump, and then we're going to move on.
I think we should move on, but you're absolutely right. I just hope that people will take the time to look it up and read it. And like you say, there's disinformation in everything that we're stuck with. But read it, because you don't have an answer. Why did we do this? We need to know. The public needs to know what's happening, really.
Well said. That does sum it up, and the door is open for all of you. And in a way, when you walk through that door, you're going to walk through it with Bill Tompkins. He obviously lived through that period of time and knows things, I'm going to guess, that he is not going to discuss now. Maybe at a later date in his life, I don't know. He's 93. Are you 93? Is that it, Bill?
It may I'll be.
92.
Right.
92. Well, you are a living piece of history. You're, in a way, a national monument. That's what they do in Japan with remarkable people. And they make them living monuments, and you are that. Okay, my friend.
I wrote George. This story up in last year in my father's files, number 15, that they can read about it on the National UFOCenter.com.
Very good.
Or I guess on your site, I don't know if it's still there.
It should be.
But in any case, using basically Navy information. In other words, what they've released, and they're releasing quite a bit, even pictures of downed aircraft. I don't think they admit the whole UFO thing, but they certainly admit that they lost aircraft and ships.
I'd like to see the pictures, if you could send them to me, of the downed aircraft. And that piece of footage from the Soviet documentary was stunning. It was clearly of a fleet in South America, I mean, and off the coast of Antarctica. It was way down there, and there was fighting going on. You could see it. Oh, it's just amazing.
They weren't brought down by Eskimos.
Say that again?
They weren't brought down by Eskimos.
No, there were no Eskimos down there. Eskimos up north, if there are any. Okay, let's move ahead then. Bill, what would you like to talk about next? This is you're the guest here. I'm not going to push anything.
I would like to just touch on Solar War, because we mentioned that before, but it's I've got to get everybody to just take those two words and stick it into the computer. And
which two words?
Solar Warden.
Solar Warden. Okay.
Yeah. Solar Warden is the U.S. Navy's space battle groups, who are all operating outside of the planet radius of the solar system. And Solar Warden was a top secret name for this these eight Navy space battle groups, which were designed in Douglas think tank in 1954 and 5. And I personally designed five of the spacecraft carriers types and some 30 different support ships, destroyers, cruisers, support ships.
When you say you Bill, when you say you designed them, that's engineering. That's obviously a very sophisticated, a long and involved process. Did you do the basic design of the shape, size, and configuration and let the engineers do the rest? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. let me explain it.
Okay.
Like we mentioned before, in the secret think tank, you're asked to do something. So they ask you to come up with a type of ships that would be required to operate, naval ships operate in space. And to do that, they didn't tell you this, but what I had to do was, okay, what's the mission? So I conceived the missions first, types of missions that we'd be involved in, and then designed different types, concept configurations of different types of ships. Were on, you can see in the book, the 17-kilometer-long transport, okay? That's a big ship. And there's little figures in it, and there's some of the data about it. And then that, if they decide that that's going to be built, we had a separate group in engineering who would make basic configurations of virtually everything that would be required to build that. And, of course, nobody had a facility to build it in the United States. And there's when Jack Northrop bought the naval manufacturing area back in Virginia so he could figure out how to build these kilometer-long spacecraft carriers. But what I did, and some of the other people did, was just come up with the figuration of a type of a vehicle that could handle that kind of a mission. And frankly, I spent more time on establishing the missions. So you'll see in the book several of these different types of kilometer spacecraft carriers, uh-huh. And then this cigar that's 17 kilometers long. Come on. This is insane. These then started to get into construction at the Northrop facility, which is underground in up in Utah. And they actually built all of them. And there's three. My understanding is that there are three of those battle groups who cruise the area outside of the solar system. And supposedly they're sort of there to kind of protect us. The others are all out in the galaxy, several of them at war with reptilians, just as we talk.
Well, it would seem to me, if the reptilians have the kind of technology we think, that these wars wouldn't last too long.
The answer to that is that what you do is you carry the big stick and you wave it. And so far my understanding is that the battles that we actually have with them are, as you said, just very short battles. And we have been working with the Nordic naval people, and so they've got equivalent equipment, but they don't have the numbers, which is our big problem.
Where do the Nordics come from? What is their home planet in your knowledge? Where do they come from? Our solar system? Have they been on this planet for a long time? What's the deal?
Well, I think an easy way to answer that one is line up where the pyramids are facing, and I think it's called Orion.
Yeah.
And Unfortunately, reptilians are from a similar area, but they're a long ways apart. And so you have this situation where somehow, my understanding of it is somehow we have a group of people who formed a monetary group who cruise the galaxy. And they cruise the galaxy hopefully to try to stop people that get upset with the other people and they go to war. And so that vehicle, which looks like the moon, but it's about the size of the planet, it flies through the galaxy. And it has people from every civilization in the galaxy on board. And they live there. That they help to monitor other people's problems. And that's existing. But we have this other situation with the reptilians who have, for some reason, thought that they have the ability to cruise the galaxy, not just this local area, but mm-hmm. cruise the galaxy
mm-hmm.
and attack the people on the planets that are around those stars and take them over and essentially make prison of them, like we have been made prison by them, and control us and use us as slaves. And that part, my understanding, hasn't been fixed. So your Navy is, actually, there are much far better vehicles that are being built right now than those 8 battle groups which were built in the 80s and 90s.
Uh-huh.
They're order of magnitudes better because we have learned so much more from the Nordics. It's just interesting to me that it's like we got good guys and bad guys out there.
Same old story. When you were in the 40s during the war, working at Douglas and wherever, you mentioned blonde secretaries. These were Nordics, I assume? Best of your ability?
My secretary was a Nordic, yes.
All right.
At Douglas. And the propulsion section chief had another girl. They looked very similar, very nice people. And we had one Nordic guy, real good-looking fellow, and he was there part-time. But essentially, they were here to make sure that we got phase 2 and phase 3 of the Apollo implemented. And those phases are to go out to the solar system and build naval stations on habitable planets or their moons in the solar system. And phase 3 was to go to the 12 closest stars and put U.S. naval bases on the planets around those 12 stars, Alpha Centauri being the first star. But it didn't work.
It didn't happen. What stopped it primarily?
Well, just the same thing that stopped us at the moon. The reptilians parked their vehicles around the rim. And the picture in the book is kind of interesting. I made the drawing, but it's close to what took place. And I think it's in the back of the book. I'd rather have it up front. But you mentioned, Frank, I mean, Jeff, that not going back to Antarctica again is because we've been notified.
Right,
that's
yeah.
not a good thing, too.
Yeah.
And so your astronauts on the moon were notified that they could go ahead and finish two or three more missions to the moon, pick up the rocks, take their pictures, and then come on home, and not to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had a war. We were simply notified.
And, I've heard that, yeah.
We didn't complete the major programs of Apollo. And like I've said before, it's unfortunate that people don't have the information about these sort of things. But the Apollo mission was not just to go to the moon and pick up rocks. We were to build a 2,000-man research and naval base on the moon. And I did much of the design for it. I even did design over North American Rockwell on different advanced systems for our bases.
But who's up on the moon? Who's up on the moon right now?
Well, there's several people. There's extraterrestrials, and we have some of our people there too. They're involved with Solar Warden, and they're involved with bases that we have on Jupiter's moons, which are Solar Warden. And we have bases on Mars. And there's a lot more. It bothers me. What really bothers me is they'll have, the regular NASA will have big programs where they build this very large rocket again, liquid propelled, and they go up to Mars and they take a crawler and they take it out of the ship and they soft land it on the surface of the moon. Mm-hmm. And it has six legs with wheels on it. It drives around and takes pictures and it digs in the ground and digs up soil and it transmits all its information back, which is such an expensive cover-up. We've got bases there. That's the reason that disclosure on this whole subject is so important, because there's so many lies. There's so much cover-up that's been presented to the public.
Mm-hmm.
NASA, there's two NASAs. There's two programs. Completely
right.
Different. And there's the stuff that they'll let the kids see, and then there's the real stuff. To go to the expense to build another rocket, to build another crawler, to crawl around and pick up rocks on the moon or on Mars or whatever, it's such a waste just to keep the information from the public. It's crazy what we're doing.
So it is all a parallel program, a cover-up program. That's what it is.
Yes.
That's what you found out. Okay. This is, again, talked about by a number of people. Mars seems to be a planet that had, at one point, a tremendous civilization. There's obvious relics and artifacts all over the place. The pictures are embarrassing. Some of them are clearly swiped with a Photoshop blurring tool. And yet they leave some of the things to be discovered. They can't hide them all, I guess. You've seen them.
Yes.
It must make you twice as mad, yeah.
Yeah, it's on the moon, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, amazing.
George, anything you want to add here?
Well, I had given a talk about that very subject and actually used European Space Technology and NASA film of like 150 photographs and asked the public, you know, after they saw the photographs, did they think there was life on the moon or on Mars?
Mars, yeah.
In any case, people think after they see all these photographs put together, you know, with the pyramids and structures and there's a lot of what appears to be the openings to tunnels, and most likely the Martians live underground, or at least most of them. In any case, it looks like it's an active place with actually some of our own NASA photographs show UFOs flying around up there.
No, I've seen them. No, I have. Frank, you want to add anything?
I'd like to ask Bill if he's ever had the opportunity, if he could share this, if he's been off planet.
Frank, I'm trying to get what you're saying. You're asking me if I have been there or that I have knowledge of that.
Have you been? Yes. Have you been off planet, Bill? At all off planet?
If you could talk about it.
Okay, that's a different subject, but I do remote viewing, and yes, I've been off-planet numerous times. And
now, are we talking about remote viewing, or are we talking about physically off the planet?
I have not been off the planet physically. I remote view sometimes.
Very good.
And I have flashes, which, for whatever reason, puts me into or onto the bridge of a U.S. Navy spacecraft carrier and or even a reptilian spacecraft carrier. I have gone on board them. And I see, hear, and smell everything. And a lot of other people have done this. And incidentally, you're talking about me being some sort of a thing that nobody else has. There's a lot of people who have been exposed to many, many things, and they're just not talking about it.
You know, and people often ask, Bill, well, how can you keep a secret? It's impossible to keep a secret. No, it's not impossible to keep a secret. It's very simple to keep a secret. You simply threaten people.
Yes. And when you say you threaten them, you mentioned to them about the Secretary of the Navy being taken out, or Bobby gets taken out, or even Marilyn Monroe. And incidentally, Marilyn Monroe was a big operation to take her out. But, this thing of threatening people, they don't just threat if it doesn't work, but one of the family members goes out, and then they go.
Right. And
with with Solar Warden and with the release of the information, okay, which appears that this could be taking place, really, in the next few years, disclosure, you need the Nuremberg type of trials on not just some of the military people but and some of the politicians, but we need it on some of the corporate directors. And some of the banks and the Trilateral and the Bilderberger, all these people need to be, they should not be allowed to have gotten away with these things all this period of time. We're blaming reptilians for everything or the extraterrestrials, and we have our own mess with the situation with fuel that we don't need and medical problems and drugs we don't need and not being allowed for extended life. All of these things that has been this cover-up need to be addressed, not just release the information and let all these people off the hook. We've got to do it nice, but we need to release this information to the public because we need their help. Your Navy needs their help. Like we said before, Admiral Hugh Webster, 4-star admiral, he said it over and over and over. We need every man, woman, and child in the country working on this. Don't cover it up. Don't tell them what the history is. Tell us what the real history is.
Mm-hmm.
It's staggering. I don't want to be on a soapbox on this, but we really need help.
Well, whoever whoever is in control of the cover-up is showing no signs of wanting to let go of it voluntarily, so far that I can see. Are you getting indications that I'm right, or am I wrong?
I have almost prayed that this would be released for 65, 70 years. And for some reason, it seems like there's enough structure started that maybe we actually will get to this point, maybe not full disclosure, but partial disclosure, to try to ease the public on the planet into what's happened and look at all the advantages of a free planet.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't allow the reptilians to do what they're doing to us. And even our own oil companies shouldn't allow. We don't need the oil. In my second book, I tell you why it was I resigned from TRW.
Mm-hmm.
And it was from the same old thing again of the systems we developed, tested. They all worked over 3.5 years, and we didn't need oil, period.
Wow.
But then the corporate was owned 53% by the oils.
Oh, really? TRW. Hmm.
And I want to touch TRW for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
TRW essentially was part of the groups that we worked with for the different missile systems that were developed.
Mm-hmm.
The IRBMs and the short range ballistic missiles and all this other stuff. And so those guys were our advisors on all these programs. So they formed a company. And then they got unlimited money. We at TRW had unlimited money to study anything.
Hmm.
Develop it, look at it. Medically, we cured cancer, the whole ball of wax, okay?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm not a doctor. I did the concept planning for the development to stop the cancer and stop using the chemo.
That chemo will kill, is deadly, and most of us know that by now. You're familiar with, of course, the work of Royal Raymond Rife from the 1930s and others who have come up with cures for cancer. It's quite easily curable. There are a number of things that are available now that can take care of cancer. We are eating ourselves into this state, in most cases, with toxic food, poisons, chemicals, environmental causes. One out of two people get cancer now, and it's completely not necessary. Nor is it necessary to kill people. And that's what the pharmaceutical companies are doing. They're killing people. How many people have been killed, for example, intentionally, I don't mind using the word, with cancer, since Royal Rife gifted the world with a cure for cancer and other 50 other disease states caused by bacteria and viruses in 1931? They held a dinner for him in Pasadena. It was called the End of All Disease. Every major scientist in America was there. We have photographs of it. And then, of course, the whole thing was attacked by the AMA and the pharmaceuticals and the government. Royal Raymond Rife. So when you say we cured cancer, I'm not in the least surprised.
Well, like you say, it's surprisingly easier, but just think of my position. I know this stuff, and I've been involved in it.
Yeah.
And but my wife gets cancer. She's had cancer twice, and she doesn't need that.
No.
She's a nice person.
Very few people deserve to get. There are some who I don't care about. But most people do not need the suffering. Most families don't need to see the suffering. It's a horrible thing. It's big money. There's no money in curing it. There's money in treating it. But most of the people treated don't make it. It's just awful. When the treatment is worse than the disease, you know you've got problems. Stand by just a minute, and we'll come right back, Bill. Hold on.
Okay.
back. George Filer, Frank Chile, and Bill Tompkins. What a story. All right, now we have about 10, 12 minutes left. I have a note here about the North Island photo detail of 1936. Frank sent me a picture of the North Island down there, and it is the most unusual picture I've ever seen of an island. It's bizarre. It appears to have a huge concrete roof over it, over half or two-thirds of it, maybe a landing strip on top of that, and then something underneath it, and I couldn't tell you what it is. I don't know if it's a real picture or an artist tweak of a real picture, but have you seen that picture, Bill? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they sent me a copy of it. I hadn't seen it before that, but I think it's a very interesting picture. I don't know whether it got on the internet recently, but I assume that it did. But there's a great deal of retouching being done on this in this photo. If you look down at the bottom of the photograph, where mm-hmm. there's a ship tied up there,
mm-hmm.
that ship is not a U.S. Navy nuclear aircraft carrier. That is the U.S. Navy's 1922 first aircraft carrier, the Ranger, mm-hmm. and it doesn't have a bridge or anything, and it's tied up. So this tells me the photograph was taken in 1932. Then there's these two hangars to the right, about a half inch over on the photograph, and those are supposedly the big seaplane tender hangars, except that the seaplane tender hangars today, if you go down there and look at them, and you can see it from the Star of India on the other side of the bay, mm-hmm. They face towards the bay so that you flying your big Navy seaplane can just taxi up with the wheels you've got and go right inside the hangar mm-hmm. without having to go in and make a turn. And those are not curved concrete buildings. So the only thing I can say about them, they must have been one of the very early wood hangars. Now then, we come down to the middle of the photograph, and there's a big shadow, it looks like, underneath something there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a shadow either. That's just a different material that's separating what the I explained some of the things on North Island in the book,
mm-hmm.
and instead of just having all runways, almost half of the entire island was paved over so that you could take Navy airplanes. This is way back when they had two-wing airplanes with the wings made out of cloth.
Steerman, okay. Steerman.
Everybody could take off at the same time. The whole
uh-huh.
squadron could.
Huh.
And if necessary, they could all land at the same time.
Ah.
And it's one that's not used in most military airports, but they did that way back in the 20s. So then there's this a big round dark thing in the upper left part of the photograph.
Right, it's a circle. And, yeah.
Yeah, and what that is, that's 20-mile deep tunnel or trench, and it does not have a railing around it.
20-mile deep?
Yeah, now if you believe that, if you really believe that, Jeff.
No, I don't. That's ridiculous.
Okay. What I'm saying is it probably is a different version for helicopter landings and takeoff.
It's just been painted a different color to demark the area where...
Yeah, it's like new asphalt.
Okay. But the rest of it, you feel, is concrete?
The runway is some of it's asphalt and some of it's concrete, but that's not a roof over something.
Very good. Okay, you've answered a question. I'll if you can send me that picture, Frank, I'll pop it up in headlines and our listeners can get a look at it.
I certainly will.
It's a fun thing to look at.
Yeah, it's very odd looking. It does look as if there's an enormous concrete roof over two-thirds of the island or thereabout, and something is underneath that roof. If you go to the right side of it and up to the top, it looks as if it's an opening, but it's not. It's just flat and clean, or it has it been tweaked digitally? What do you think?
My opinion is somebody wanted to play with it, and because at the lower half of that, the corner that's closest to the reader, looks like it's still a shadow. It looks
does.
Like there's a big shadow.
Yeah.
But actually, that's part of the regular flat asphalt that's used for the takeoff and landing.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody's retouched this picture.
I see.
And the original picture is like 1920.
Wow. Okay,
it
so...
Has to be because you got the wrong aircraft carrier there.
Yeah, I get it. Okay. So your guess on the age of this photograph is 1930, maybe?
Yeah, 1930, maybe.
Okay. Very good. Okay, now... Go ahead, Bill, please.
Okay. I was just going to say that the asphalt part of the circle is probably just for the aircraft or the helicopters.
But, okay. Well, they didn't have helicopters in 1930.
No, but somebody's having fun.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah, I looked at that picture and I wrote to Frank and I said, Frank, what's the deal with the picture? And he didn't know. But you know North Island very, very well, and that's why it's good to get this cleared up. I'll post a picture tonight, folks, in headlines, and I'll just put North Island Naval Station, San Diego, 1930, approximately, and you can take a look at it, and you'll see somebody has messed with it. It looks like a piece of science fiction.
Unfortunately, things get on the internet that are not.
Oh, yeah. Quite. Yeah. All right, Bill, we have about 3 minutes left. Now, you're working on your second book already, correct? Are you at it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. And that's primarily TRW, because, like we said before, that was a staggering program. Northrop bought it, and so they get all the advantage of the good part, and one of the things that we had been working on, not myself, but some of the people had been working on, was how to figure out what it would take to build these large kilometer-long spacecraft facilities, vehicles.
Right.
And so Northrop then borrows money and he buys the largest one on the planet that builds the aircraft carriers back in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And that's a learning curve. Okay, and I've gone into pretty much detail on that in the second book because it's kind of a fun thing. How would you go about building? You're an aircraft company, you build airplanes. So how do I build a 1,000-foot long or kilometer long spacecraft carrier? Well, gee whiz, they got this big naval facility building them back there in Virginia. He despises it. And they have fun with it for several months, crawling all over partially built carriers, figuring out how to modularly design and build it. Actually, I had spent some time at Northrop designing that was 2 years before I went over to Douglas, and I was trying to design vehicles that had no wings, which was the opposite of what Jack Northrop was doing. And Jack Northrop was telling us to do it.
Now,
it's just kind of a thing.
Yeah, Northrop, built the flying wing.
Yes.
Now, that's a very interesting story, which you know much more than I do about it, but the flying wing was first built with pusher propeller engines.
B-35.
What's that?
The B-35.
Yeah, and they were six engines, I believe, three on each side, and just a wing. That's all it was. Looked like a boomerang UFO, if you will. And then they switched to jet, internal turbojet engines. The government wanted to fund it, but then the funding was withdrawn. The people at Northrop believed so strongly in the flying wing that they offered to build it to finish the conversion of the existing flying wings from turboprop propeller to jet engines on their own time for free to save the taxpayers' money so the plane would get its just due. But what happened? The plane was canceled. They were scrapped because the whole project went into black operations. Is that a fair summation?
Absolutely. I have a lot of information on that in the second book.
Well, we'll have you back because I really want to hear that story. That flying wing is an astounding aircraft, and you can see color pictures of one flying in the 1953 or 54 film, War of the Worlds. It's what dropped the atomic bomb on the Martians in the movie. And to see that thing flying is just extraordinary. It's a German design, make no mistake about it. We got that from the Germans. And Northrop followed it through and built the flying wing. Just an amazing story. Bill, we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your information, as always.
Okay, I really appreciate it, Jeff.
All right, it was fascinating. All right, you take care, Bill.
You too.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one.
Thank you. And Frank, thank you again for helping put this together. Always
my pleasure,
my gratitude.
The German design for that flying wing came from the Horton brothers.
I know. Yeah, I know a lot about the Horton. Look up HO-229, folks, if you want to see what the Hortons did. HO-229, and see what the Germans had in World War II. Thanks to the Horton brothers. And that's all the beginning of the Northrop Flying Wing. Major Filer, sir, thank you for being here, as always. That was a fascinating journey.
It certainly is. Hopefully we'll continue our journey.
We will. That flying wing story is remarkable. I'd like to hear what you know about that, too. All right. Thank you, guys. You take care.
Good night, Jeff.
Good night.
Good night.
Night, George.
Happy New Year to everybody.
Same to you. All right. We will pause for 21 hours. Be right back with you tomorrow night. No rest, no time. Got to keep at it. And we will. You take care and we'll talk soon.